This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick, and here's what's coming up.
We ask you to do this because we believe it is important to ensure that schools do not become sites of transmission at a time when infections are rising fast.
That's South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on the decision to close schools again for a month to help fight the spread of COVID-19. Those stories and more are next on Africa News Tonight. Five West African leaders, Ghana, Nigeria, Niger, Ivory Coast and Senegal, ended a day-long summit in Mali yesterday without a deal to end the country's escalating political crisis. West African bloc ECOWAS will hold an extraordinary summit on Monday. For VOA, Nicolas Pinon reports from Paris.
Hopes for cooling down Mali's heated political crisis came to nothing Thursday night in Mali's capital, Bamako. After hours of closed-door meetings, each side held firm on its position. The M5 movement still demands that President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta resign. But the demand is a red flag for the ruling party and the regional bloc, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, which rejects any unconstitutional change among its members. The presidents of Ghana, Nigeria, Niger, Ivory Coast and Senegal came to Bamako in an effort to ease tensions. The current chair of ECOWAS, Niger President Mahamadou Issoufou, said shortly before leaving Mali that the bloc will take up the crisis again Monday at an extraordinary summit. He said ECOWAS wants to show its solidarity with the Malian people through this political crisis and find a solution. He reaffirmed the need to find a compromise to enable Mali to end this crisis, and felt optimistic that a deal is still reachable. This is not the first regional effort to ease tensions and quell deadly protests that have resulted in 11 deaths during the past few weeks. ECOWAS's involvement is seen as biased by many opposition followers who claim heads of state are protecting each other. However, ECOWAS status and text clearly mention the defense of the rule of law to prevent unconstitutional change and coup. Agile Yabi is the founder of WATI, the citizen think tank of West Africa.
ECOWAS has been building a tradition of involvement, including a protocol on good governance and democracy. And I think that can be a difficult option for them because the perception will be again negative from the opposition leaders and from the movement, the M5 movement, and some important portion of the population in Mali.
The June 5 movement, named after the date when the protest began, has tapped into deep anger over Keita's perceived failure to tackle the struggling economy, corruption, and an 8-year jihadist insurrection. Malians are also angry at the disputed outcome of long-delayed parliamentary elections in March and April that handed victory to Keita's party. The president dissolved the constitutional court in June after it overturned provisional election results. Even if President Keita stays in power, this frustration must be addressed, says Dakono Baba, a researcher with the Citizen Observatory on Governance and Security in Bamako. He explains that many had expectations that were not fulfilled after President Ibeka came to power. People want him to improve good governance and fight against impunity in the judicial system. He says that Malian people are frustrated and this needs to be taken into consideration. Otherwise, tensions could increase even if a deal emerges with the M5 movement. The opposition M5 movement stated that its original demand, the president's resignation, has not changed, but behind closed doors, a roadmap seems to emerge, according to media reports. The report says a unity government could be formed and new judges to the Constitutional Court appointed. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says most public schools will close again for a month and the school year will extend into 2021 as the nation's case burden of coronavirus passes 400,000, Africa's highest number. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
School's out for August and the academic year will be extended through 2021, South Africa's president announced late Thursday. A move affecting more than 14 million children and the adults who care for them. The order covers government schools, not private schools, though many private schools are also closed. Most schools have been closed since the nation declared a state of disaster in March and imposed a strict 9-week lockdown. Public schools restarted for 7th and 12th grade students in June, but many were forced to close again after 775 schools experienced viral cases. Ramaphosa explained his decision, which was supported by teachers' unions.
We have taken a deliberately cautious approach to keep schools closed during a period when the country is expected to experience its greatest increase in infections. I'm aware that this arrangement that I've just announced will disappoint many learners who want to be back at school and may cause inconvenience and difficulty for many families who need to make alternative childcare arrangements. We ask you to do this because we believe it is important to ensure that schools do not become sites of transmission at a time when infections are rising fast.
He stressed that the National School Feeding Program, which covers 9 million children, will continue to provide meals for collection. Ramaphosa, who stunned the wine-producing nation 2 weeks ago by announcing a sudden ban on all alcohol sales, also announced a $30 billion aid and stimulus package. He then admonished those who abuse the system.
What concerns me and what concerns all South Africans are those instances where funds are stolen, where they are misused, where goods that we have to procure are overpriced, where food parcels are diverted from needy households, where there is corruption and mismanagement of public funds. From the outset of our response to the pandemic, we have been quite clear that there should be no scope for corruption in the use of these public resources.
Ramaphosa did not give details on how the school year will be extended into next year. South African schools are aligned with the calendar year, with the school year beginning in January and ending in December. Moreover, Ramaphosa added, grades 12 and 7 will be exempted from the 4-week break, with grade 12 taking 1 week off and grade 7 2 weeks. The decision drew swift condemnation from the opposition Democratic Alliance, with party leader John Steenhuisen saying this decision is not supported by the best available evidence, it is not supported by education experts, and it is not supported by the virus data. In addition, education and human rights advocates say they worry that this prolonged absence could lead to other problems, such as psychological stress and increased risk of abuse at home. Your correspondent did not have to go far to hear from overburdened parents, many of whom have struggled to work from home since late March, while their increasingly feral children bounce around the house, leaving a trail of impressionist crayon art, dirty cups, and discarded socks. In fact, if someone would please stop pulling mommy's hair for just a few minutes, she can finish writing this radio story. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has vowed to pursue those who have abused funds meant to fight COVID-19. The Crime Special Investigation Unit is investigating hundreds of companies and government officials suspected of looting such funds through corrupt deals. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
In his address to the nation yesterday, Ramaphosa expressed disappointment at the extent of the alleged looting. He said his office has established an investigation center comprising 9 state law agencies to deal with the looters.
This center is currently involved in investigating allegations of corruption in areas such as the distribution of food parcels, social relief grants, the procurement of personal protective equipment and other medical supplies, as well as UIF special COVID scheme.
He said up to 800 companies are under investigation and vowed to recover every missing cent.
We are determined that every instance of alleged corruption must be thoroughly investigated, that those who are responsible for wrongdoing should be prosecuted, and that all money stolen or overpriced should be recovered.
KwaZulu-Natal Province Premier Siltus Kalala says the province has lost over $900,000 to corruption.
We want to express our serious concern about the findings, which reveal a flagrant disregard and abuse of procurement processes, which have prejudiced not only the Department of Social Development, but the KwaZulu-Natal government and the people of KwaZulu-Natal as well.
Ramaphosa has signed a proclamation authorizing the Special Investigating Unit to institute probes relating to COVID-19 funds used without seeking approval. However, political analyst Ncebisi Ndletshana says Ramaphosa's efforts could be met with challenges.
Even now, they are still a little bit understaffed. There are certain posts that haven't been filled. And already there are piles and piles of cases that they needed to investigate. And now you are adding COVID-related investigations. So the mere announcement alone is not sufficient. Yes, it is encouraging, but what you need to know, you need to go further and say, do they have capacity to investigate?
In the same address, the president announced that schools will be closing their doors again due to concerns over the spread of COVID-19. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN High Commission for Human Rights says it is concerned at allegations suggesting that Zimbabwe may be using COVID-19 as a pretext to clamp down on citizens' freedoms. President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government has imposed new restrictions to slow the spread of the virus. That includes restrictions on movements and a 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew. Some claim it's intended to hamper a national protest scheduled for next Friday. In addition, authorities have arrested a prominent investigative journalist who has been reporting on corruption in acquiring COVID-19 fighting supplies. He was arrested Monday together with an opposition leader on allegations of inciting public violence ahead of the protest. Tanzania's former president Benjamin Mkapa has died at a Dar es Salaam hospital where he was receiving treatment, according to a statement from President John Magufuli. Mkapa served as the country's third president from 1995 to 2005 before handing over power to Jakaya Kikwete. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Announcing death to the nation on television via the Tanzania Broadcasting Corporation, President John Magufuli said Benjamin Mkapa died late Friday.
Ni waombe wa Tanzania tulipokee hili na tumepata.
Magufuli called on all Tanzanians to receive the news of Mkapa's death and to pray for the country's beloved father. He said more information will be released, but Mkapa is no more. The president declared a 7-day mourning period during which all flags will be flown a half staff. A statement from the United States Embassy in Tanzania, posted on Twitter, says the embassy is deeply saddened by the passing of Mkapa. The message said, as president, he worked tirelessly to bring greater peace and prosperity not only to Tanzania, but to the whole region. The embassy statement added that Mkapa's effort to reform the economy, fight corruption, and reduce the spread of HIV will make a positive impact on Tanzania for generations to come. During his term in office, Mkapa privatized state-owned corporations and instituted free market policies, which won the support of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund and resulted in the cancellation of some of Tanzania's foreign debt. He also chaired various peace resolution meetings and led the East Africa Community Dialogue Committee that sought to find a solution to the political instability in Burundi. The cause of Mkapa's death was not immediately released. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Haley Adams Fitzpatrick in Washington. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com.
A study of COVID-19 in Africa examines five categories of countries with a smaller number of cases and lower percentage of deaths. The study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies was based on size of population, dimensions of urban landscapes, magnitude of conflict and displacement, demography, transparency and governance. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawy asked Joseph Siegel, co-author of the study, to differentiate between the categories.
Just briefly, it is interesting because we do see different trajectories and different risk profiles on the continent. The next category that we identify is what we call our stable regional hubs, countries like Ghana, Kenya, Senegal. These are mid-sized countries that are integrated with the regional economy, but they're showing relatively lower levels of transmission. And this seems to be partly a result of them having relatively stronger press freedoms. So there's more transparency, exposure to what's happening, more public education. There is relatively a strong health system. There are younger populations in these countries, and they don't have the population density that we see elsewhere. So that seems to be contributing to the more moderate effects. The next category is what we're calling clustered cities and fragile states. These are category represents about a dozen countries, mostly in the Sahel, where you have the combination of relatively large geographic areas, but the vast majority of people are congregated in urban areas. And so unbeknownst to a lot of people, you know, the Sahel countries have some of the highest population densities on the continent. And so this creates a vulnerability for transmission and something we're keeping our eye on. So far, though, they've experienced the relatively limited levels of transmission, at least that are reported. Again, they have lower levels of international exposure, so they wouldn't have been exposed necessarily to the first wave, and they have lower population age. This may provide them some mitigation. Nonetheless, they remain an at-risk category. Two other categories we look at together, these are small countries of populations of, on average, about 5.5 million people. It comprises about two dozen African countries, and here, these are countries that have relatively limited international exposure, small urban populations, they're stable, they don't have a whole lot of conflict or displacement. Yet, there's important differences between those that are relatively more open, meaning more press transparency and democratic, versus those that are more closed. And what we see in terms of the pandemic is that those small countries that are more open are testing about 30% more than the small restricted countries. Yet the restricted countries are experiencing or reporting some 75% greater number of cases per million. And so it really helps show the important role that a free press plays in public education, in transparency, in serving as an early warning system, and building trust with the government. And so you get higher levels of cooperation in responding to the pandemic. We have those, what we're calling low transparency countries, and this includes Tanzania, Burundi, and Eritrea. But these countries, it's just really hard to know what is going on because they're not testing and or reporting what's happening with the pandemic. And as an example, on average, these countries are reporting just 16 cases per million of population. And the average in Africa is about 189 cases per million. And so the worry is that there is a high degree of underreporting in these countries. And with limited response, it is causing unknown level of transmission within these countries. And this not only puts those populations at risk, but it puts neighboring countries at risk because of the transboundary movements of people and cargo. And so we may be very well seeing some hot spots in these countries that are really flying under the radar.
That was Joseph Siegel, co-author of a study of COVID-19 in Africa, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawy. A high-profile South Sudanese activist has fled to the United States with the help of the U.S. government, which issued emergency visas to him and his family after he said President Salva Kiir ordered him abducted or killed. Peter B.R. Ajak arrived in Washington late yesterday after weeks of hiding in Kenya and an anxious departure complicated by COVID-19 restrictions. He told the Associated Press shortly after landing that the last few weeks have been extremely terrifying. The 36-year-old Ajak is a Harvard graduate and economist who helped shape the country's national security system. Ajak was later imprisoned, then released under a presidential pardon. The number of health workers contracting COVID-19 continues to rise in Malawi, which the government says has the potential to paralyze efforts to fight the pandemic. The health ministry says 223 health workers have tested positive for the coronavirus. Although there have been no deaths so far, the workers' umbrella group, the Human Resource for Health Coalition, says the situation is spreading fear and lack of enthusiasm. The coalition partly blames the public's reluctance to use prevention methods and inadequate supplies of personal protection equipment. The organization plans to meet with the president to discuss the situation. Reporter Lamek Messina spoke with the coalition's chairperson, Shouts Simeza.
Yes, it is true that Malawi is registering an overwhelming and alarming number of cases among the healthcare workers. In other words, many health workers are getting infected, getting confirmed of having diagnosed with the COVID-19. It is a big worry. There are a lot of anxieties amongst us health workers in Malawi, a lot of fears, and this is creating troubles in the fight against the coronavirus in Malawi.
What are the factors that are contributing to this high infection rate of COVID-19 among health workers in Malawi?
We have a couple of associated factors to this. One, the personal protective equipment in our health setup are not adequate, and health workers are doing things as usual. Secondly, we recall that in Malawi, the past 4 weeks, we've had the campaign. I remember I have made a comment and asking politicians on 12th May, when I had a press briefing again, asking all political parties to make available cloth masks, using their party clothes, so that all patrons, including health workers that were going to hear the policy campaign speeches, would be given free so that they got protected. But this was not well implemented, and this led to increased cases in Malawi in general, and because the general cases access the health services from health facilities where we provided the care. We gave them care without knowing they were infected. We also have had an experience that we received our brothers and sisters coming from South Africa, coming back to their country, Malawi. These two led to a lot of issues in the spread of the virus. We've had the stories that our colleagues that were put in quarantine in Blantyre, many of them ran away. And what is happening now is that those that were infected are infecting others.
So what message are you sending out to health workers as regards to what is happening now that they are being infected?
Not isolating the fact that nurses, midwives, health workers are also social beings. And to that I've made the call that health workers should continue to strive to make sure they are protected everywhere they go, in the wards, in the social interactions, let there be continued protection. So I've called for all health workers to protect themselves and protect the public as well.
You have said that the health workers now are working in fear. What impact does this have on the delivery of health services in time of this COVID-19 pandemic?
That two key, impact, if you like. In Malawi, we've always advocated for additional health workforce. We are not in good numbers. And the meaning here is that those health workers that are getting infected are sent to quarantine centers for a minimum of 14 days. And because we're talking of shortage, it means those that are going for quarantine are already creating a bigger gap. Right, and all those that we are working in contact with these colleagues that are going for isolation, rather for quarantine, we also need to go for quarantine. So eventually, we will not have a health worker on the ground, and that is a big opportunity for the advancement of the coronavirus if we don't take care about this.
So, what do you think is the way to go to solve this problem?
People are not staying home. People continue to loiter around aimlessly, some without no basis, without no business, without no activity, just walking around. Let the law enforcement agencies do their work, making sure that everybody is protected. The more people are getting infected, the more the workload we are getting and the more we are getting infected as well.
That was Shout Simeza, chairperson for the Human Resources for Health Coalition in Malawi, speaking with reporter Lamek Messina. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for choosing the Voice of America.